Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse Opoyan.
Welcome to Rewind, WisPolitics.com, Wisconsin Eyes Look at This Week in the Capitol. First up, we have Wish I Was There. We have Paul Ryan talking tariffs, the debate on allowing cryptocurrency, donations to campaigns, Grover Norquist on criminal justice reform, testimony from the Bruderman Task Force on school funding, and Governor Scott Walker and Mike Pence at a rally in Milwaukee. Wish I Was There.
As you know, I did not like the steel tariff idea. I did not like the 232 is what we call it. I did not think that was the right thing to do for the basic reason is it was going to raise a lot of prices and put a lot of manufacturers in a very bad situation. And so our hope is that we don't go down the tariff route because tariffs have these kinds of consequences. And we go down the route of making sure that if people are cheating on something, we call them to the carpet. And that's to me the better way to go. Be more surgical.
People could donate Bitcoin or whatever cryptocurrency to my campaign, to other campaigns, should they choose to. We would be under the requirement to make sure that we have the reporting information. It's not incumbent on the commission or the state government or anyone else. We have to know where our money's coming from, the same as with cash or any other sort of donation, so that wouldn't change either. And then, again, my recommendation in the letter is that it be liquidated right away into dollars as soon as possible.
That's my question. What's money?
Mm-hmm. And that really is the larger issue with this entire request for advice is what is money? Is cryptocurrency money? If it is, I think there's a way that it could be contributed in the state of Wisconsin. If it's not money, does it fit within the definition of what could be done through an in-kind contribution of property?
With that in mind, that's why I think criminal justice reform has been nonpartisan, bipartisan, as bumpy as the road has been, compared to mega issues where there's just titanic fights back and forth, wanted to go in completely different directions, and where I think we can expand from there to other similar derivative issues that flow from the same challenges.
I am concerned about the increasing cost of educating a child with a revenue cap that forces us to choose between academic priorities and socially emotional priorities. Our children deserve to have access to both, and there needs to be special attention paid to small rural communities that lack those wraparound services.
You could say there's some good and some bad of Act 10, but what it has done is made teachers free agents. Basically, the market, it's a market-driven world. If someone retires making $70,000, you used to be able to replace that person with maybe someone making $30,000. That's not the case anymore. It's almost like free agents. Because there's such a teacher shortage, you have to pay what the market will bear.
Not only is the unemployment rate at 2.9%, which puts us in the top 10 states in the nation in terms of having the lowest unemployment rate, the labor force participation rate, which is the percentage of people in the workforce, is now nearly 69%, which puts us number 5 in the nation, one of the top 5 states in the country. We know a thing or two about lowering the tax burden. In fact, from January of 2011 through the end of this budget, the cumulative impact of our tax reform for the hardworking people of this state will exceed $8 billion. That's billion with a B.
Well, hello, Wisconsin. It is great to be back in the great city of Milwaukee with men and women who voted to elect a president and leadership in the Congress that have enacted tax cuts that are putting America first.
All right, Jesse, so last night, here's my quick summary of the first 58 minutes of this U.S. Senate debate, right? So Kevin Nicholson knocking career politicians. Lee Vukmir saying she's done it before and you can trust she'll do it again. Am I about right ballpark?
Sounds about right.
And it honestly seemed like a dud for a while. And then this happened. Please check it out.
If you realize that our problems are so enormous and so huge, you got to be willing to break the glass and really, honestly, do it differently. And I know you all know that because you're conservatives and you see what's happening. I'm your candidate. That is the bubble. That is the establishment. That is why we lost that Supreme Court race recently. If we continue to replay these same mistakes, sending insiders to do a job that outsiders need to go and take care of, we're going to be sitting here talking about the exact same problems in 6 years.
Well, let's talk about that, because it's clear that there is a difference between the two of us. I appreciate, as I've said before, I appreciate Kevin's service to our nation. But he's going to have to prove what his conservative track record is. I don't have to prove that to you. You know what my track record is. We know more about Kevin's track record as a Democrat than we do about his track record as a Republican. And I think that is the issue. Who can you trust to follow through and make sure that the conservative principles that every one of you in this room holds near and dear are the conservative principles? I'm going to keep talking. That's how you buck leadership.
My track record, I would look to the battlefields of Iraq and Afghanistan if you wanted. That's where I'd look first. I know that doesn't mean much to certain politicians. I know that darn well.
That's wrong.
Those that I have served with know that darn well.
Ladies and gentlemen, please.
I'm going to be blunt. For those that have said that leading Marines in combat during the course of two wars does not qualify as conservative credentials, you need to look inside them and decide what they think conservative credentials are.
That was a very, very low blow to say that I don't respect you. And I want to make sure everyone in this room knows that. I respect your service, and I'm grateful for your service, Kevin. And I didn't really, that was really a low blow on your part. And I would ask you to apologize. I get it as a military.
Senator, we have to.
We must respect our military. I do.
If it makes you feel better, I feel respected.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to end the debate at this point.
So, Jesse, what do you make of that final flurry after 58 minutes of, like, not a whole lot?
Well, maybe they realized the headlines were going to be pretty dull if they didn't get something in there at the end. You don't get the sense that these two are going to be the best of buddies when the dust settles on this, and I think that came through the end. Vukmir has sort of staked her entire argument on her career and her record, mm-hmm. and Nicholson has staked much of the turning point in his conversion story is his military record. And so if she's questioning his credentials, maybe he sees that as questioning his record. She takes offense at that. She's a military mom. She wants to make it clear that she does respect military service. But it felt like it got very personal after about an hour of just agreeing with each other.
One thing I picked up from talking to some people already is that Nicholson kind of his go-to defense is military service, right? Mm-hmm. I don't say he wraps himself in it, but nope. uses it as a shield. Leah's is the experience. She wraps herself in the experience thing. Mm-hmm. There is a certain hostility below the surface that it kind of came out at the end. What I want to know is, like, to me, debates are like moments, right? Like, what do people take away from that? How many people watched last night's debate, number one? You and I paid attention. Two, what's the lasting image and how do these guys use it? Is there an opening for Leah to use that last comment about, if it makes you feel better, to kind of portray him as somebody who, I think there's some people who thought that was a little condescending remark. How's that going to play? And then are there people that he can capture of like, look, she's questioning what a conservative is and she's defining it as the swamp. I'm the real outsider. Do you get any sense of that?
Yeah, well, there was an earlier dig, which was kind of thinly veiled at the swamp from Nicholson. He was referencing comments that Keith Jilks had made at one point. He's a longtime Walker strategist, and a lot of his folks are sort of on Team Vukmir. So we saw this emerging, are people upset with the establishment? And when did Leah Vukmir become the establishment? And, how does that play out? Do people want change? Or are they saying, hey, don't go after, does the Republican base say, don't go after Scott Walker and the team that lines up behind him?
Interesting note, when they were introduced, now we're in like deep red Waukesha County, like the heart of it, the Pewaukee Hotel, where everybody goes for these things. The reaction to Leah was very overwhelming, cheering. Kevin, much more polite. And why I bring that up is that we have to look forward to the GOP convention in a couple weeks from now, where there's going to be an endorsement vote. And my sense is that the Nicholson backers want to downplay the expectation of what's going to happen there and also raise the bar for Leah, what she has to cross to be a success. There's a memo, I think you saw a couple weeks ago, from Nicholson's campaign talking about, well, in less than 85% would be a failure. The bar to get the endorsement of the party is 60%. I'm not sure it's realistic to think 85% is the real bar. But the Nicholson folks, I think they realize that there is an issue there, that Leah has been plugged into these folks for a lot longer, thus the reception last night. And how will that endorsement vote play out, and then how will they react to it? To me, it's make or break for Leah. She's got to win that endorsement. I mean, say have to, but it's very, very, very important for her strategy to win that endorsement vote, right?
It is. I mean, if she gets that endorsement, the resources line up behind her. People start to coalesce in a way that they haven't yet. I think people right now, it's just hard to get a sense of who's the front runner there, because the numbers and the polling certainly is strong in Nicholson's favor, but most of that stuff is coming from his campaign, and so we don't really have a good sense until they get on the floor and they start having these conversations. And you know, Nicholson has a lot to prove to people who have known Leah Bubner for a long time, but you know, she does have to prove that all of her time in state office has been worth it to get the support of the party that she's been representing for all these years. I cannot imagine an 85% endorsement coming out of that, but you know, we've seen in years past, you know, sometimes they don't endorse, sometimes they do. And if they do in this race, I think it does mean a lot for her.
There is still an avenue, I get the impression, for Nicholson to run against the endorsement, run against the establishment, run against party apparatus. And I think I get the impression he's queuing that up already about, like, the swamp with Kevin Nichols, or with Keith Gilkes and his comment, the party and the failure with the state Supreme Court race.
Yep.
He's already kind of knocking the establishment to run as his outsider. So, but I'll be paying attention to that endorsement vote quite closely. I'll be there. Not sure if you will, but
I will.
Counting the minutes for that. Now, let's switch to another big event this week. We had Mike Pence in town. So, Jesse, every presidential visit that I've seen in Wisconsin, presidential campaigns, they get a bunch of positive headlines, right? It's kind of like when we watch Walker go to small-town Wisconsin, he gets positive headlines. The national media watch the vice president come to Wisconsin, they get positive headlines, right? So, but what's the payoff to you for Walker to have Pence in Wisconsin?
I think the payoff here is, in among conservatives in Wisconsin, Donald Trump has not always been popular. Now, we're seeing Wisconsin conservatives line up behind him the longer he's in office, and the more things that he can point to in terms of regulatory changes, policy changes. But they've always been behind Mike Pence. He's always been the kind of Republican conservative that people in Wisconsin can get behind. They see similarities between him and between Scott Walker. So for Mike Pence to be here, it shows Walker is tapped in. He's you know, on the right page with the national figures, with national conservatives, that he's getting, you know, resources and attention from the national level, from the White House. But it keeps him a step removed from some of the chaos that comes with being right next to Donald Trump.
Don't forget, Mike Pence also did a fundraiser for Scott Walker while he was here. I think the invitation I saw had tickets of $10,000 for up to two people, the VIP picture. So I'm sure Walker cleared a decent amount of change from that. The question that I've, you know, people try to raise this, oh, the vice president's coming to save Scott Walker. And it was happening right after the Supreme Court race. We kind of found out he was coming. My impression is that this has been worked for weeks, if not months, before the Supreme Court vote, that you don't get the vice president here on a dime. You know,
no.
It takes a little while to get there. Going forward, I want to know, like, what's the national effort going to be for Walker? I mean, the RGA has already said $5.1 million, I believe, post-Labor Day. The DGA has said $5 million in Wisconsin for the final weeks. So where is this race going to fit in that top tier of control campaigns? I'm not sure we're sure yet. And I'm not sure because of the Democratic field that's so jumbled. I'm not sure we know where we're going to fit in because of that yet, right?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, it's hard to get national apparatus to say we're going to come in and back up the Democratic candidate when they don't know who the Democratic candidate's going to be.
And don't forget, part of the reason why Mike Pence here was to sell the tax bill. We have not seen great poll numbers for this yet. So part of the here is the pitch. And here is Mike Pence's pitch at the rally this week in Milwaukee.
I want to thank this governor. I want to thank Governor Walker for that kind introduction. I'll tell you, it is always great to be with a governor who knows about winning. Winning for Wisconsin and winning just like the Milwaukee Bucks are going to do tomorrow night at the Bradley Center, right? The great manufacturer Foxconn announced the largest private sector investment in Wisconsin history, $10 billion that will create 13,000 new good-paying jobs right here in the Badger State.
This president, our entire administration, been working with our great partners in the Congress, with great leaders like your governor, and we've been keeping our promise to get this economy moving again. I mean, we promised to roll back the heavy hand of government, and working with Wisconsin's conservatives in Congress, this president has actually signed more laws rolling back federal red tape than any president in American history. President Donald Trump signed the largest tax cuts and tax reform in American history. That's promises made and promises kept.
So, Jesse, Republicans passed a big fanfare, the school safety package, before they left last month. This week, A.G. Brad Schimmel said $100 million sounds like a lot of money. On the surface, but acknowledged, quote, we know that we're going to come short of money because every school in Wisconsin is going to, he hopes, will apply for a grant. If they get one, it would amount to an average of $31,000. How does Schimmel envision these grants making a difference for Wisconsin schools?
So he broke this down into two categories, primary needs and advanced needs. Every school's got a wish list. Every school's got a plan of what they would do given X amount of dollars. So what he said is he'd really like to get at least every school in the state to a baseline of security. So that's these primary needs like classroom door locks, improving those or getting them installed in the first place, getting shatterproof glass in the external windows. And he said that will probably take up about a third of this pot of money. So from there, the question is, are there additional sort of advanced things that they can do, like video intercom systems or panic rooms, or not panic rooms, but panic alarm systems, mm-hmm. Exit door alarms, so you don't end up with doors propped open. And he encouraged schools to apply for both at the same time, and I think the thought will be just see what the needs are and figure out what makes the most sense. What this will not fund is weapons or vehicles, and this will not fund salaries. So schools who want to maybe hire an armed guard will not be able to use this money to do that.
Or body armor.
And
Brad Schimmel is not going to push Army teachers, although he's opened the idea, so that's not part of this package.
Right.
Interesting to watch if that comes back next session. Mm-hmm. But my impression was they want to get everybody something.
Yeah.
The question is, who's going to apply, and if they all apply, it's not a lot of money spread around to 3,100 school buildings, roughly, from what he told us on Wednesday. So moving on, just kind of more of a check-in on this one, but we all know Lena Taylor had a little bit of issue at a bank a few weeks ago. We kind of heard about something was going to come. This week, we hear that the citation will be going forward. They're going to prosecute this. I guess my question is, do you expect any fallout for Lena Taylor in the Capitol at this point?
I think it's hard to say. I mean, I think this has already become more of an ongoing story than it would have been had the players involved just been a little bit more upfront, because there's been sort of each update is dragging out and it becomes, you know, a several weeks long story as opposed to just maybe a quick story on what happened. You know, it's not a criminal charge. It's a citation. We don't know what was said exactly. We don't know the details. We haven't seen the video. Depending on what was said, maybe it's problematic and maybe we hear about it, but I'm inclined to say maybe this fizzles out by the time they get back to the Capitol.
We've been asking Jennifer Schilling's office regularly if there's going to be any kind of like penalty. They're not much comment out of that.
Yeah.
I wonder more for Taylor. I mean, we heard her name floated for various Milwaukee offices all the time.
Yeah.
Mayor, city attorney, on down the line. Mm-hmm. What would this impact that kind of a bid? You know, now, if Democrats win the majority this fall, which is possible but a tough hill, maybe that's an attractive thing. But if you're the minority and there's a long time in a caucus, you look for other avenues to get out.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if she looks to get out, how this is going to play for that in Milwaukee. Now, we also saw movement in the 1st Congressional District. So Brian Stile shocked no one by formally announcing on Sunday he's running for 1st Congressional District. He also announced to backers he raised $250,000 in the first few days. Has he essentially ensured another big name Republican will get in to the race at this point?
I think so. I mean, the speculation happened immediately after Paul Ryan announced he wasn't going to run, and it didn't take most of the bigger names to say, or didn't take them long to say, we're not going to do it. You know, Speaker Voss, Reince Priebus, who I don't think anyone ever really thought was seriously going to run, but the names that could clear a field if they did get in. I don't see an avenue at this point for anyone else to get in, and I don't even know who hasn't said that they're not going to run.
The only thing I've been asking about is there somebody, a wealthy individual, who could come in and write a check that would launch his or her campaign, but I've heard no names mentioned for that.
Yeah.
So unless that person comes forward, he's got Paul Nehlen, who's a pariah in the Republican Party, Nick Ulce, I think you say his name, who what came to run against Ryan, which I think is going to play well with Republicans. That he's came to challenge Paul Ryan. So I'm not seeing that feel. I mean, Style is basically the front runner, right?
I think so. Yeah.
But on the Dem side, what's Peter Barker going to do? Do you think he's going to get in?
It seems like this is not an environment for a familiar face to get back in the ring. I guess the Democrats are having the same conversation in the gubernatorial field with Tom Barrett talking about getting back in. I seem to hear the same things about both of them, which is they did a great job while they, you know, did it the first time around, but maybe this is the time to get some fresh faces on the ballot. I think it's tough. There's not a lot of room for him to get in terms of fundraising and endorsements. You know, Randy Bryce has a lot of those locked up. Kathy Myers is still raising money, doesn't have as many endorsements, but there's, you know, the money is already flowing in that field and pretty well locked up between the two candidates who are involved. You know, Peter Barker was the last Democrat to hold the seat, which is a decent selling point, but it's a tough road for him if he wants to get in.
You know, this perception drives Republicans crazy, but there are progressives who believe that Randy Bryce pushed Paul Ryan out, you know, forced him from the race. So there's a perception among those people I talked to that if Barker said to Randy Bryce, well, thanks for what you did, but now it's my turn, you know, let's have you move aside, it just drives these progressives crazy. At the same time, Republicans see the fact that Barker is talking about it as a sign that Bryce is a flawed candidate, because if Bryce were perfect, nobody else would be thinking about it. With Barker, I just don't know if he's looking for an exit strategy from the Assembly Democratic Caucus. This is the second go-around that caucus. He was minority leader. They pushed him out. So do you want to be a backbencher for a couple more terms? I mean, it's a safe Assembly seat. Nobody's going to beat him for that anytime soon. So I don't know what he's looking to do. But I also know if he can raise the money to be competitive in a short window, because you've got to get on the ballot, and then you've got less than 4 months now to raise a couple $1 million if you want. I mean, do you want to catch Randy Bryce or at least be like halfway competitive? So maybe you have to raise $1 million. That's $1 million in 3 months. I just don't know what the avenue is there. At the same time, I've been told by Democrats, if he gets in and if he won the nomination, the money would flow. We'll see. Because Ryan's not there anymore, right? So I don't know if the traction is there for that race at this point.
That's what my biggest question is, I guess. And I know, you know, Randy Bryce still is raising good money, but the target's not the same anymore. There is so much national attention on let's get the Speaker of the House out, and he's out. So
for what it's worth, Bryce's campaign said he raised $210,000 in 13 days after Ryan's announcement. So he's still raising money. We'll see if the clip continues. And then I want to get to what's still kind of an developing story. I've got Scott Walker is going on the air. Now, the immediate reaction of Democrats is this guy is freaked out. He's panicking. He's going up early. To put it in context, in 2006, I remember Jim Doyle went on the air in July. That was crazy early to us back then.
Sure.
In 14, though, Walker was already up in March, but that was kind of because Mary Burke ran this ad out of the gate hitting Scott Walker in the unemployment rate. So what do you make of the fact that Walker's up by himself right now with no outside groups running ads, no Democrats close to being on the air from what we can tell? What's it mean that he's on the air or going up Monday or Tuesday next week?
I mean, I think it means he's taking the environment seriously. He's not making any effort to hide the fact that it's going to be a good year for Democrats. It's pretty much central to his strategy at this point in terms of firing up the base and saying, we've got to take this seriously. It's not going to be a good year for us. You know, I think that the one major advantage that Democrats do have that they'll tell you that you know, when they're trying to tell you it's a good thing that there are so many candidates in the field, is they do have that many candidates running around the state and talking about Democratic messaging, which by and large doesn't differ a lot from one candidate to another. So they've got that going for them right now. They've got a presence throughout the state. Scott Walker can't be everywhere that 9 or 12 Democratic candidates are, but if he goes up on TV, he can.
Yeah. I still get the impression that Democratic field, nothing is really coalescing for anybody. They're still struggling to raise money. And there's this added level now with Tom Russell. He's a consultant for the DGA to lay the foundation for the general election candidate. So whoever wins a primary August 14th, in theory, August 15th, Tom will be like, okay, here's your foundation for the general election bid. Yeah. It's a sign that national people take Wisconsin seriously and see it's in play. But if you're in a primary right now and trying to raise money, there's more competition for those dollars, because I'm sure Tom Russell and DGA are raising money for the general election effort. So it's probably a double-edged sword of, great, we're going to have the structure in place August 15th, but I got somebody else making calls for dollars. Well, how's that going to work out? So let's kind of change gears to the stock report. So please weigh in if you'd like. But
sure.
So we have Foxconn rising this week. So we've got the DNR, approving the air and water permit, the air permit, the water diversion, 7 million gallons a day, I think, or something like that. The big, though, thing that I took away was construction is going to begin shortly. There was a big announcement, you know, when Pence was in town for this rally, that roundtable discussion announced construction starts. My impression has been Scott Walker needs to have tangible evidence of Foxconn becoming a reality to start to change voter sentiment. So the fact they're going to have shovels in the ground, that they're announcing, I think, 90% of the contractors are from Wisconsin, that would seem to help. But my impression, too, is you need to make an effort to have, or an impression on Eau Claire, La Crosse, mm-hmm. Wausau, make them feel like there's a benefit for them out of Foxconn. And that's still a wait and see. Am I in the right ballpark there?
I absolutely agree. He needs those tangibles if this is something that he can sell to the rest of the state. And Democratic candidates are, you know, pretty much all speaking against this, although only a handful of them really say that they would undo the deal if they got in. I think they're acknowledging that if shovels are in the ground, then this may be something they have to embrace at some point.
Well, if you bring up the Democrats, you got to mention that Peter Barker voted for Foxconn.
Good point.
So if he got in the primary, would that help or hurt him? It is in the district. And Tom Barrett, by the way, was at the announcement for Foxconn saying great things, so he kind of backed away a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
How would that play if Tom Barrett got in? So just a little bit. I'm not sure they're actually going to pull the trigger anyway, but if they do, expect some blowback about that. Next this week, we have cryptocurrency donations. I'm sure this is like a hot topic for a lot of people, but the Libertarian Party asked Ethics Commission for permission or clarification to make sure they could take Bitcoin, those kinds of things. The impression I got from the hearing on Wednesday was some of these commissioners are not excited about the idea of opening that door because they just don't, they're not familiar with it. Is it legal tender? Is it not? How do you trust this thing? How do you treat it? Because remember with Bitcoin, I don't have any Bitcoin, by the way.
I don't either.
but if you get it on Tuesday, it can change value by Wednesday and Thursday. So how do you report that donation as like the day you got it or the day you spent it, or do you have to convert it to dollars right away? So I don't, I wouldn't bet right now that they're going to really enthusiastically embrace this option. Do you?
I don't see how you square that with contribution limits. I mean, if it's constantly changing and you can't keep track of it, something that was legally, you know, allowed under the current limits 2 days later could be, you know, massively above that, or it seems like a can of worms that no one wants to open right now.
And following, we have Kathleen Vinehout. So here you have a candidate for governor who's been struggling, at least the perception she's been struggling.
Yeah.
Her campaign manager left at the end of March. Now, to be fair, not most campaigns have had somebody leave lately. We've had some turnover, right? But with Vinehout, this is your campaign manager. They told us other staff have left. They won't tell us who. They tell us that her husband is taking a greater role in the campaign. Okay, that's interesting. By the way, her campaign manager left 5 days after the vote in the Senate on the background checks. Now, we both have heard rumblings that that did not sit well with people in the Democratic primary, that here you have an issue that is 80% in the Marquette poll, and she's voting against it, saying, well, you guys don't get guns in rural areas, which I get that argument.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're running the primary for governor, how does that work exactly?
I was surprised when she made that speech. It did not sit well with primary voters. I spoke with several primary voters who had been undecided and said, this does not help me in terms of moving over to her. And her campaign manager did say that that was part of the equation, maybe not entirely.
She hinted at it.
Yeah. So it's not a great sign. Her husband obviously has a political background, so it's not like, you know, just Joe Schmo having their spouse help out with the campaign, but maybe she'll be among the first to start winnowing the field. I don't know.
Well, it's interesting that there's a perception that she has a ceiling. I mean, she was in third place in the Evers poll that we saw. There's a perception that because of the money and other issues that she's got some of a ceiling. Don't forget the abortion issues that she's going to have to deal with and other stuff. I get the impression that when you're looking at how these guys are going, she's had some struggles right now.
I think so.
So, well, that is Rewind for April 27th. I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Boyan.
Thanks for watching. Have a great weekend.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.